Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Just Interesting podcast, the weekly show that's not too boring, not too interesting. It's just interesting enough. And we talk about things that we find, well, just interesting. And this week, Robin, I thought we would discuss some of the most extreme cases of human survival, humans who survived against the odds. And I'm afraid, Robin, you will have to be surviving just with me this week. As Martin is currently, well, I mean, he set off into the jungle and no one's seen him since, but presumably he's going to come back with a fantastic story of his own.
What can I say? Martin, not a person to take a dare lightly.
No, we said we want stories of extreme human survival, and he took that as a personal challenge and set off to the Borneo.
He really did. So, he really did.
Bizarre.
Yeah. And we said, but Daniel needs you, Martin. And he said, no, not this time. And then he went.
I was thinking for a second then, Daniel, who's Daniel? And I forgot we're pushing a joke that's so niche. I've lost track of where that started. I don't know how that began.
You started it. Like all our mimetic jokes, Alec, you started it.
Nah, I don't believe that.
You did. But I don't know how it started or where it came up. But yeah. Anyway, stories of survival against all odds. I'm excited. How are you, though, before we get into that?
I'm good, Robin. Good. I've been surviving quite nicely this week, to be honest. It's been fine. Yeah.
It's been fine.
How about you? How about yourself? Have you seen or done anything exciting over the past week since I last spoke to you?
You know what? I had an unintentional Jason Momoa-thon when I went and watched Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. In a screening full to the brim with two other people. And then I watched Fast X, both of which star Jason Momoa.
Oh, amazing. Well, you
know, great time was had by all.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on one of those films in particular, obviously. but actually, that does bring me on to something that I was hoping to discuss. We were toying with the idea of, for our Patreon channel, for our Patreon exclusive episodes that we do, more interesting, of which there's over 100 of them. But we were toying with the idea of doing like a book club type thing, but with movies. So let us know if you do support us on Patreon or, you know, might be interested in that sort of thing. If you would like to join our little movie watching club where we would discuss a film, say what the next week's one is, and then come back and review, discuss, see what our thoughts are on it.
Yeah.
I thought that might be quite a fun idea.
I think it's quite a nice idea. But yeah, we'll see, because it's a good excuse to watch films that we wouldn't otherwise watch, you know. And speaking of our Patreon supporters, a massive thank you to everybody who supports us on Patreon, whether it's as little as $1 a month or as generous as our silver and gold tier members, who I'd like to thank right now in particular. Cindy Hafner, James, Rashad Najjar, Caleb Wilkerson, Kurt Jones, John Baker, Henny Ruffle, The Super Show Podcast, Nicholas Dill, Emmett Tapier, Ahmad, Pease Ward, Josh Tromatek, The Filthy Casual, and Simon Workman. Thank you all so much for supporting us all this time. You keep the lights on. Thanks so much for your generosity. And now, I believe, Alex, it's time for you to give me a riddle.
Oh, Robin, I love that voice. I love it when you do that voice. Talk to me more like that. For the rest of the episode. Actually, no, don't.
The whole episode. I think I might have some throat problems at the end of it, but not from the usual reasons.
Okay, well, let's move on swiftly from that. But I do have a riddle this week that I would like to share. If you do know the answer, leave it in the comments down below on YouTube, or wait until the end of the episode where I shall reveal the answer to all. So here it is, Robin. Two fathers and two sons are in a car, yet there are only three people in the car. How is this possible?
What?
Maybe a bit of an easy one for you. Kicking. Still waking up in January. Two fathers and two sons are in a car. Yeah, there are only three people in the car. How is this possible?
What?
Well, have a think on that. Ponder it for a bit. And before we get into the main topic, I was wondering, do you have any favourite comments from the past week, from previous episodes on the podcast or on our second channel, Uncovered?
Oh, yes, our second channel. I do have a comment that I'd like to bring to the attention of our lovely listeners. On our last podcast episode, which was 2024 Psychic Predictions, talking about the predictions for 2024 by psychics such as Nostradamus and Baba Vanga. And RealCap1410 says, in regards to predictions explicitly and specifically made for 2024 by our very own Alex,
ooh,
who predicted, amongst other things.
I've already forgotten what I said.
You made a very poetic kind of expression.
It was deliberately vague, so anyone could interpret it how they want.
However, one of the things you put in your prediction,
your
psychic prediction, you mentioned that the rivers might run green.
Yeah. And no, I meant that.
RealCap 1410. He says, every St. Patrick's Day in the US, Chicago dyes the river green. So Alex is right so far.
You're welcome. I mean, I guess it just kind of came to me. I don't know what I was thinking. But I suppose if it happens every year, it can't really be a prediction, is it? Like, you can't really predict.
I don't know.
What do you think is going to happen in 2024? Well,
I think there's still value in predicting the sun will come up tomorrow because, you know, it might not. Some people want to cancel Christmas, Alex. Haven't you heard? That's why we need to vote for Trump.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. We won the war on Christmas.
Well, thanks to Trump, we did. But now we need to secure the win by getting him back in office. I'll be voting for Rishi Sunak this year.
I was going to say, if you're voting for Trump, then maybe they're onto something with voter fraud because you definitely shouldn't be eligible to vote in the US election. Well, Robin, I had a comment from Java Dog 6186, also from that same episode. We had some cracking responses on that episode. But they say, as a psychic, I was a bit sad I didn't make this earlier. Here are some of my predictions. So this is Java Dog's predictions for 2024.
Okay.
And in case you didn't watch last week's episode, some of the predictions were pretty bleak. So this one is kind of along the same level, okay? So war with Taiwan and China, that would be pretty awful if we see that happen this year. Okay. Something else with China, I don't know. I saw China in blue. Okay.
China in blue. Okay.
Yeah. Just China in blue. Don't know what that means. Two major movies. Now this is specific. Two major celebrity deaths in Elizabeth Olsen and Jonathan Banks.
No. What?
It's an absolute shout.
That is a real no. Elizabeth Olsen can't die.
Jonathan Banks. I don't know
who that is.
Who's that?
Sorry. Who is this?
Oh no, that's the guy from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, Mike Ehrmantraut.
Hmm.
You've seen Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, right, Robin?
Mm-hmm.
Oh dear. No, that will absolutely hurt if that happens. They say a volcanic eruption in New Zealand, Trump will win the election, Labour will win the general election here in the UK, I'm guessing.
I mean, is that a prediction? That's more like a
No, that's an absolute prediction knowing this country.
You're 50-50 on that one, yeah.
My outlandish prediction of the year, Texas will secede from the United States. A boat will sink in Cambodia on March 25th, killing 150 people.
My God, that's specific. That's incredibly specific.
Very specific. If you're in Cambodia, don't get on a boat on March 25th.
Or the 24th, just in case this happens at midnight.
Yes, good point. And
stay away.
Finally, they say there will be a meme related to a painting. I mean, you've got classical art memes, which is always ongoing.
Yeah, that's a big thing. So I'm not sure what they mean by that.
It could be one that cuts through, like one that really emerges. Like there was that restored picture of Jesus. That was that was a massive meme.
That was a big deal. Yeah.
So maybe they're thinking more along that lines. But yeah, all in be. All, some very specific predictions, which is pretty bold. In stark contrast to the rubbish prophecy I made last week. That was just so vague.
No, yours is beautiful, Alex. Yours is beautiful.
Thank you.
But those are some very bold predictions and some very interestingly specific ones, which, given you also got the very vague, I saw China in blue, that I'm very intrigued as to how the specific details get expressed.
Yeah, China in blue. And then immediately after that, the death of Elizabeth Olsen and Jonathan Banks.
That's just cruel, man.
Well, Robin, with that all out of the way, shall we jump into the main topic of discussion today?
Oh, yes, please.
So we've got several top stories of extreme human survival that we wanted to discuss this week. Robin, would you like to take us away with the first story?
Oh, thank you. I would love to. This is a very appropriate story for the very chilling winter weather that we're having at the moment, at least in the UK, if not in Western Europe, and I think in America as well. But my story concerns a woman called Ada Blackjack, who's a native of Alaska.
Okay.
And she was born in 1898 in the remote settlement of Spruce Creek in Alaska. Her father died of food poisoning when she was 8 years old. Oh. And her mother sent her to a missionary school where she learned English and learned to sew and to cook and other things. When she was 16, she married a man called Jack Blackjack.
Okay.
Yeah, Jack Blackjack. He's real. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be picturing Jack Black for the rest of the story now.
That's all I can see there. I couldn't find a photograph of him. So all I could see is an even blacker Blackjack or even Jacker Blackjack. I don't know. Jack Black. His name was Jack Blackjack. Gosh. So that's where she gets the surname, Ada Blackjack.
Petition to make Jack Black change his name to Jack Blackjack.
I'm confused now. Jack took Ada to live on the Seward Peninsula, which is in the middle of nowhere with no neighbors. And the Seward Peninsula is the part of Alaska that's closest to Russia.
Okay.
On the very far west. And it's, at the time, incredibly barren. There was, nearest settlement was 40 miles away where they lived. They had three children together, but only one of them survived infancy, her son, Bennett. Oh. Her husband, Jack, abused her and eventually just abandoned her and Bennett. So Ada got a divorce and she walked 40 miles back to the nearest settlement to live with her mother. And Bennett at the time was only 5 years old and was too tired a lot of the time. So she carried him for those 40 miles when he was too tired. But this is all prelude, by the way. This is the actual story. Unfortunately, Bennett had tuberculosis. And so having no money to feed him and certainly no money to afford the cost of treatment, she put him into a children's home where he could be better cared for while she went and got a job. And the job she got in September 1921 she was hired as a seamstress on an Arctic expedition because she'd been taught English and had learned to sew.
Hmm.
The expedition was financed and planned by a famous explorer called Vilhelmur Stefansson, but he wasn't on the expedition. Instead, the expedition consisted of just Ada and four relatively inexperienced men, one European and three European Americans, all in their 20s. I think the youngest one was 19.
Right, okay.
They weren't very experienced in exploring.
Mm.
And the task of the expedition was to go to a place called Wrangel Island, which is an island north of Siberia and uninhabited, with the aim being to establish a settlement and claim the island for either Canada or the United Kingdom.
God, you just don't get things like that these days, do you?
I know, it's mad.
You don't get expeditions. Yeah. You send four people out to claim an island.
I know, it's nuts.
Yeah.
Only one of them had been to the island before in 1914 after being shipwrecked there.
Okay.
They took 6 months of supplies with them. And the idea is a boat carried them over to the island, dumped them with all their stuff and their camping gear, and then the ship went back. And then after, I think, within a year, I think it was about 8 months, another ship was supposed to come back and pick them up and give them new supplies if they wanted to stay. That was the plan.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that if that was there. Yeah, so the boat's just going to leave and you're all here on your own now.
For 6 months until the boat comes back.
Yeah. That's right. They'll come back in 6 months.
Yeah. But guess what happened? Wrangel Island is notoriously inhospitable, even by Siberian standards. It's subject to cyclonic Arctic storms, constant mists, fog, constant frost. And in winter, the temperature is below freezing for months on end, with frequent snowstorms. And after a year, the winter had set in with deep pack ice that drove away the ship that was scheduled to pick them up or resupply them after 6 months.
Mm.
So the expedition's rations ran out. The men weren't able to hunt enough animals to eat. And one of them developed scurvy. So in January 1923, three of the men left to walk across the frozen ocean, the frozen Chukchi Sea, 90 miles into Siberia to find help, whilst Ada was left to look after the man with scurvy on Wrangel Island in the deep frozen Arctic storms.
Right.
Okay. Even though
this
she
is
had
not
no...
a good situation.
No. So even though she had no medical knowledge, Ada managed to keep him alive for 5 months until finally he died. Although her diary reveals that he was pretty abusive to her.
Oh my God. What?
Verbally, not physically, but yeah, he was pretty miserable. So he wasn't great company. Meanwhile, the other three men were never seen again. Presumed dead.
Okay. Yeah.
So Ada survived for 8 months alone, except she did have the company of the expedition's cat called Victoria. So it was just her and a cat alone, and she survived by learning to shoot and hunt, to build and set traps, to build boats, and make parkas out of reindeer skin. She just taught herself all this.
This lady is unstoppable.
I know. She even learned how to use the camera equipment that they'd brought with them. There's a collection of selfies, essentially, from her on her time and her time on the island alone.
So this is who Instagram. This is really who Instagram influencers should aspire to be like. Really.
They really should.
Look to this lady, Ada Blackjack, as your motivation, Instagram influencers. You know, she had 8 months alone with her and a cat taking selfies in an abandoned island in Siberia. Yeah, amazing. Wow. So what happened next?
In August 1923, she was rescued. She was rescued by a friend of the man who had funded and planned the expedition. I think his name was Henry Noyce. And he got concerned that, like, you know, we haven't heard from these people for a while. Maybe we should check on them.
What do you mean we hadn't heard from them? You were meant to send a boat. That was, so, yes, you should check in because you haven't.
What? So 2 years, she was rescued 2 years, almost to the day, after setting out.
Wow.
On her return, she became a celebrity. But although the famous explorer who planned the expedition, Vilhelmur Stefansson, put her front and center in the media and many books were written about her, she resisted all the attention and she never got any money from all the books and the articles and the talks that Stefansson planned about her. The only money she received was her salary for the expedition, which, as it happened, she was paid less than she'd been promised. And a few $100.
This lady's life is so sad.
I know, it gets worse. And a few $100 for selling the furs that she'd trapped on Wrangel Island. But, silver lining, she used that money to take her son, Bennett, to Seattle to be treated for his tuberculosis. She remarried, had another son, and she lived quietly until her death at the age of 85.
Okay, so, I mean, it sounded like things did get better towards the end there.
Yeah. The sad thing is she did outlive her sons. She lived longer than they did.
Okay, that is sad. That's very sad.
It is sad. But she lived a quiet, mostly content life after that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, what amazing.
Ada Blackjack.
What an amazing lady. That's incredible.
Mm. I would hope to have her kind of talent, if I'm ever in that situation, to just learn skills out of necessity.
But, and look, Robin, I love you, man. I love you, but I don't think you do. Like, you would. I don't think anyone, I don't think 99% of people do. It's not an insult on you.
You may be right.
I would be dead within a day. And I think most people would.
You're totally right. Yeah.
I mean, it's like you said, it's a bit nippy here in the UK at the moment. And I've had to put the radiators on in this tiny, tiny room.
Oh, yeah. I've got my radiator on full blast. I'm wrapped in a blanket. I've got hot water. I'm just so cold.
We couldn't survive in regular Siberia, let alone a remote, uninhabitable island, even deeper into Siberia on our own. In like
with no promise of rest.
In like the when was this? The 1890s? Did you say or 1900?
1920s actually.
Oh, yeah. 1920s.
21 to 23. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. What an amazing.
So who did you? Which story did you bring?
So
to the table?
So I've got a more modern story, and with all these kind of stories of like survival, I knew that we were going to get some classic surviving long term survival, but I wanted to imagine what it would be like in a truly horrific, nightmarish scenario. So this story is from 2013, May 2013, and it's the harrowing survival story of a man called Harrison Okene, which took place off the coast of Nigeria when Okene, a 29-year-old cook, was working on the Jackson 4, an oil service tugboat operated by a company called West African Ventures. This tugboat was involved in the oil industry, and on this day, it was servicing an oil rig in the Atlantic Ocean. Okene was in the toilet, possibly the worst place to find yourself in an emergency situation, when a rogue wave suddenly capsized the boat. He found himself all of a sudden on the ceiling of the room that he was standing in, and he looked up just in time to find the toilet crashing down on top of him.
Oh my gosh.
He had just
the
enough time.
Literally fell out of the floor.
Yeah, on top of him.
Oh. I was worried about the contents of the toilet falling onto the floor.
No, the toilet itself.
That should be fixed to the floor, man. Oh my gosh.
And put yourself in this situation. He had just enough time to see blood gushing out of a wound before the lights went dark and water began to rise.
This is terrifying.
The vessel gradually sank to the ocean floor, nearly 100 feet below the surface, trapping him inside the boat. And he claimed he felt when the boat touched the ocean floor as water was gradually filling the room that he was in. And remember, this is all happening now. The lights are off in pitch black.
Oh, no.
He panicked as he struggled to open the door. When he finally emerged into the corridor, into watery darkness, the boat is slowly filling with water here. He had no idea which way he was facing. The propellers were up. The wheelhouse was down. In the alley to the watertight door, there was an exit hatch. And he met two, possibly three of his colleagues there. And as the water level inside the boat started to rise, they were there trying to open the exit hatch to the door as the vessel was sinking to the bottom of the ocean floor. However, Okene says that I did not have the patience to wait. And while his colleagues, his friends were there trying to open the exit hatch, he swam back inside the boat, away from the closed exit. And the force of the water actually dragged him into another room and into another toilet. And the pressure from the water... and this was attached to the second engineer's cabin. The door had shut as he was swept into the room from the pressure of the water, basically. And the water level was rising, but it didn't fill the room completely. There was a significant enough pocket of air in this room, and this would end up being his lifeline.
Oh my God.
Shut away completely in the dark at the bottom of the ocean. And he says at this point, he began to hear so many shouts. His colleagues were calling and crying. And all he could do was sit there in the dark. However, at this point, he began to calm himself, began to meditate a bit, try and gain some perspective. And he, after calming himself, realized that the exit hatch was still his best chance off the boat and to safety. So leaving one big breath at a time, he would leave the safety of his air pocket and try to work on this exit hatch. But this would involve swimming out of the toilet, swimming out of the engineer's room, back into the hallway, over to the exit hatch. And there were plenty of doors. And all of this at the moment, aside from his air pocket, is underwater.
And in pitch black, yeah.
And in pitch black. And it was incredibly easy for him to lose his way.
Yeah.
He would explore the boat. He tried to explore the boat to see if there were any survivors and to gather any supplies that he could. He survived this on a few rations, basically. It was easy to get lost in the pitch black waters. And on his first foray, he nearly missed his way back to the air pocket. He said, If you got stuck in any room, you were lost. It was totally dark. I was confused. If you don't act fast, you can lose your life there. Later, he learned that one of his colleagues had entered the mess room and drowned. So he was in his air pocket, unable to open the hatch door, and he began to focus on practicalities. You know, what could he do? He searched through bags. He found a tin of sardines, a can of Coca-Cola, and some loose coveralls. He tore the covers into strips and tied the strips together into a rope, and he secured one end of it to the door of the cabin that he was in. Now, when he was exploring the boat, he could use the rope to guide himself back. So that's very smart.
That's exactly what you should do. Yeah. I'm still amazed he's finding this stuff and figuring out, because there's no light. How's he? Yeah. And he must be freezing cold as well at this point, as the water is rushing in and he's in it submerged.
And also at this point, remember, he'd consumed a lot of salt water through, because you do when you're in the ocean, don't you?
Oh, that's the worst. Yeah.
His throat throbbed and his tongue peeled and the air in there, it must be, imagine how salty that remaining last air is in that tiny little air pocket. He ate the sardines, drank the cola, and also another horrible aspect to this is he could feel crayfish making a supper of his body. He could feel them biting his legs, torso, and arms, making new wounds all the while he's there. But as time passed, he realized he wasn't going to be able to get the hatch open. He just needed to sit in the dark and pray and wait for someone to come and rescue him. There was little to cut through the sensory deprivation other than the muffled hum of vessels moving through the ocean nearly 30 meters above him. Imagine how claustrophobic.
Right there. Yeah.
But imagine how claustrophobic this would be as well.
The desire to have Superman strength and just punch through the boat and swim to the surface must be overwhelming.
But I think at this point as well, he must have realized that if he's on the ocean floor, if he punched through, that immense pressure will immediately cause him all sorts of problems.
Actually, that's a good point. Is that deep enough for some decompression sickness to settle in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. But as you said, the water was very cold and hypothermia was a risk. So smartly and ingeniously, he ripped wooden panels from the ceiling and tied them together into a little raft. So now he could sit up in his tiny little air pocket and lower the risk of hypothermia from the freezing waters surrounding him.
Wow, ingenious. How did he tie them together?
With the rope that he gathered. But he said, I tried to kill the fear in front of me, because one thing that can kill you fast is fear. That panic that comes at you, it kills you before your real death comes. Because the moment you start panicking, you use too much oxygen. So he was trying to calm himself, control his breathing, use as little oxygen as possible. He had no idea how many hours or days after he became aware of a tiny disturbance in the darkness, a reflection of light like a bubble. He left his raft to try and find the source of the light, failed, returned, filled his lungs with what little oxygen was left, and looked again. This time he saw the diver swimming on a long umbilical. Now, this is where it gets crazy, because people might know this already in the comments, but there is video footage of this from the diver's perspective. The video from the diver's helmet shows the moment he sees Okene's pale palm floating in the water before him. The diver relays to base that he has found another body, and then his hand grabs his. How terrified would you be if you're the diver?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So first,
So
Okene was taken to the diver's bell, which is like it's like an underwater pocket of air that they've put down there, basically, so the divers can go back to the diver's bell, so they don't have to return to the surface every time. For those of you who don't know, and from there he was taken to a recompression chamber where he would spend a further 3 days, because at this depth, and for the length of time that he's been down there, he couldn't have just returned to the surface. He needed time to recompress, basically, or else he could have had a lot of issues if he had returned straight to the surface. But he couldn't believe it when they told him that he had been underwater for nearly 3 days. He had no sense of having passed even a single night, apparently.
3 days?
So he spent 3 days in pitch black, in a tiny pocket of air, in an upside-down vessel 30 meters underwater, surrounded by the corpses of his friends who had sadly drowned. Incredibly, his vital signs were measured and everything was normal. His temperature, blood pressure, it was fine. So the Nigerian Navy and Dutch firm DCN Diving were involved in the efforts to recover bodies from the sunken tugboat. And I don't think they were expecting to find any survivors down there, but that yet Harrison O'Kenny survived. And do you know what he does now for a living? Do you want to know what he does now? Don't say it. He's a diver.
Of course he is.
He didn't. You wouldn't expect this given his ordeal, but he didn't let this define him. And he's conquered any fears of the ocean that he had. He says he finds the ocean relaxing.
He turned that around, though, didn't he? Other people might, if they survived that ordeal, which is a big issue.
I would never go through a boat again. Their lives.
Yeah. I'm staying away from the water. I don't care how rickety that plane is. I'm flying it. You know, but no, he's turned it. He's conquered it. I am master of the sea.
But I just thought that one's like the most terrifying ordeal I could imagine.
I can absolutely believe him losing his sense of time when you're just in pitch black, and there's every possibility that whole first portion of him just finding that air pocket and then establishing where he is and his way around the other rooms by swimming between deep breaths, that could have taken, you know, half a day to a day, and he just didn't realize it because he was so concentrated on that one thing. That's just amazing.
And the fear and adrenaline and the thought as well, like, if I fall asleep, I don't know how much oxygen's left here. I might never wake up.
That's true, yeah. I'm glad the name of this episode is People Who Survived Against All Odds, because honestly, the way that story was going, I just thought, I don't know if we're going to find out. Like, when you said that he saw a light, I was like, is it going to be like, smugglers, pirates or something, and he's gonna get kidnapped by these salvage pirates like to make him a slave for the next 10 years or something. That's how dark that story was getting. I was just like, I don't have any hope here, but no, I'm glad he got out. Whew.
When they make a movie of this, I'm sure they'll add that in as a
oh yeah, definitely
part three. Third act. Kidnapped by pirates, yeah. The pirates happen to have a decompression chamber.
Well, they're salvage pirates, Alex, clearly. They do. Yeah. would you like another story?
I'd love another story, yeah.
Yeah? Well, this one is also sea-based, a maritime journey.
I mean, the prime real estate for survival stories.
They really are.
They?
It's almost like man did not evolve to exist in the sea. So this is the story of Poon Lim, who was a Chinese sailor born on Hainan Island in 1918. And during the Second World War, he served as the second mess steward on a British cargo ship. And on the 23rd of November, 1942, the ship was on its way to New York via Cape Town and up the coast of South America, when it was sunk by a German U-boat 250 miles or 400 kilometers off the coast of Brazil, right in the middle of the vast ocean.
Wow, okay.
Lim rushed to the top deck, where he saw some of his crewmates struggling to get a lifeboat ready for launch, and he rushed to help them, and then a massive wave came overboard, and he was dragged underwater by the sinking ship. Which only took 2 minutes to sink. It was that fast.
Wow.
Hit by two torpedoes. That'll do it. Eventually, he resurfaced, all alone in the sea, the sole survivor of the sinking. Except for a few planks of wood nearby. He grabbed one to float on, and luckily, 2 hours later, he came across a wooden life raft and climbed aboard it.
Wow.
The raft must have been washed off the deck of the ship.
That's incredibly lucky.
Very lucky.
I mean,
these rafts are quite small. You can fit maybe 5-6 people on them, but they're basically just little squares with some ballast and then some basic supplies on board, which again is incredibly lucky. So on board it had 10 gallons or 45 litres of water, fresh water that is, flares, two smoke pots, a flashlight, and some food supplies, canned food, and some, that, what do they call it, that hard biscuit. You know, it's like really, really dense bread biscuits.
I don't know what you call
that. That's it. It's called hardtack, that's it.
Oh, yeah. I've never heard of that.
But when the boat was sunk, he was in his quarters, so he had no clothes.
Oh,
so
yikes.
Here he was, naked in the middle of the equatorial sea, very exposed.
Like, how naked?
First thing he did,
are we talking like fully nude?
I think underwear, I think.
Right, okay. I mean, it probably helped him survive the shipwreck, in fairness, because it's way harder to swim. And
didn't drag him down, yeah, clothes, maybe, yeah. So the first thing he did was he made himself a skirt from a Hessian bag. You know, it's kind of like woven plant material, which contained some of the supplies. He took the bag and made a little skirt for himself.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, sure.
I mean,
get some dignity back for sure, yeah.
I guess that's it, yeah. Restore your own sense of normality before you concentrate on the next step, which is, in his case, being unable to sail or steer the raft because it has no rudder or anything. It's just this little square of wood with ballast in it. He drifted 750 miles to Brazil, a journey which took 133 days.
Wow. 133 days with 45 litres of water.
Yep. The water
so
ran
he
out.
Was drinking.
Yes.
Okay.
That's not, because you drink a few, you're supposed to drink a few litres a day.
Yeah, so
of water to survive.
So you're drinking
when
like
you're being exposed to the sun.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah. So he ran out of water. When he ran out of water, he did something very innovative, I think. But I'll get to that in a moment. So he holds the record for the longest time spent adrift at sea in a raft. Several times he encountered other ships, boats, a submarine once, and spotter planes from the US Navy. But even though they saw his signals and heard his shouts, no one picked him up.
What? That's horrible. Why?
Yeah. And he spoke English as well. So he was speaking English to everybody he came across. So they should have been able to understand him, but no.
He just looked so, like, so well. They just thought he was waving at them. And they're like, oh, what a nice guy. He seems
well, he was
right.
Actually quite, I think he was quite kind to people. He says he suspects that because he was Chinese in South American waters, on his way to America, he thinks that everyone thought he might be a Japanese sailor or pilot who crashed. And they just assumed he was one of the enemy.
Right, okay.
Well, that's what he said. And I thought, well, that's a bit generous of you to to think the best of other people. But do you want to know how he survived even when his food and water ran out?
Yeah, go on then.
He fished.
I was wondering if fishing was
Yeah, he used a spring from the flashlight to make a fishing hook. And he took some of the hemp rope in the raft and unwound it to create a fishing wire. And he later dug out with his own hands a nail from the wood from the raft and made a stronger fishing hook with that by just bending it with his own strength.
Wow.
He used some of the hardtack, that solid biscuit, as bait to catch fish. And when he caught the fish, he ate them, but he used the leftovers, put them onto the deck, and seagulls would land to grab some of the fish. And when seagulls landed, he'd kill them, and then he'd pluck them. He would dip them, submerge them in the seawater, which is salt water, to get them all salty and preserved. And then he'd slice the meat off and let it dry in the sun and turn it into jerky.
Ah, that's very smart. Very smart.
Very smart, I think. Yeah.
And then what did he?
Nice salty flavor.
And then what did he bait with that? He keeps getting bigger animals using the animals he's got.
You're right, because he didn't want to eat the seagull innards, so he used the innards of the seagulls as bait for sharks.
This is going to end with him catching the kraken and eating the kraken.
So he got attacked by sharks, and he would bait. And after the first time, he thought, "I'm going to bait them." So he did. And one shark in particular attacked him directly on the deck. And he used some of the, after the first attack, he would defend himself from the sharks, or rather his hands. I don't understand how this works, but I guess this is what happens when you're desperate and alone. He used some of the rope that he'd unwound to make protective gloves for his hands.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He just wrapped rope around his hands. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm like, I mean, yeah, not sure that would help against the sharks, but it did. Anyway, he would beat the sharks to death when he caught them. And
who is this guy?
When he ran out of water, he took the shark liver and drank the blood from it to slake his thirst.
So how many sharks was he getting through?
Well, there's one story where he beat it to death when it attacked him, and I think he caught one or two others, maybe.
Just imagining this guy rocking up in Brazil, just like looking like Schwarzenegger, just absolutely complete gym rat, swole as all hell, beat with the like carcasses of like 200 sharks dragging behind the boat.
He's a very ordinary looking kind of tiny man, actually. But he did also get water from rain because there was tarpaulin on the raft, which he stripped off and made into a canopy, which not only sheltered him from the sun, but it could collect rainwater, which that's he then handy. Gathered and drank. But it didn't always rain, so that's when he drank the shark blood. He was finally rescued when he drifted into three Brazilian fishermen off the coast of Brazil, who found him, took him off the raft, and he was so weak he couldn't stand. He'd lost 20 pounds or 9 kilograms of weight. Wow. And it took 3 days for him to be able to walk again.
Wow.
But apparently he had quite the appetite and he recovered relatively quickly. And the Royal Navy used his experience in their survival manuals. He also advised the US Navy on survival training. And at the end of the war, he applied for US citizenship, but the quota for Chinese immigrants had been reached that year, so they had to deny him. But then the state intervened and they gave him a special dispensation. So that he was the one extra Chinese immigrant that was permitted into the USA that year. However, the US Navy still denied his application to join on account of him having flat feet.
Right, okay, yeah, because that disqualifies him after what he's gone through.
And he died in Brooklyn at the age of 72.
Oh, okay, nice, yeah, nice.
He made it quite far. But yeah,
wow,
I feel
what
like,
a guy. What an experience.
If he applied for the Navy, I'd be like, yes, yes, please, join us.
Surely that helps in the water. He can tread water more. He's got flippers for feet.
What does flat feet have to do with anything? You're just standing on the boat. It's just this, you know, unassuming, ordinary fella just knew what to do in that situation. And yeah, I think it goes to show how important survival gear is. Mm. You know, if you can get to a lifeboat or a raft in this case with some supplies, a bit like Harrison Okene, who he had some supplies and he had that pocket of air.
Yeah.
And if you can turn that to your advantage and really do something with it, right?
I suppose I guess you could say the same with Ada Blackjack. She had
the tools,
weapons,
yeah.
traps. Yeah. She didn't know how to use them yet, but she had those. She had all these stories, the people had the items that would save them to hand.
That's true.
They just needed to use them in the right way and figure out how best to utilize the tools that they had at their disposal. And they all did successfully.
That is the lesson to learn. Alex, you've hit the nail on the head. Beautifully done.
There you go. But they're really fascinating stories though. And I'd love to learn more about that guy. What was his name again?
Poon Lim.
I might have to look him up after this. Well, thank you, Robin. Thank you for sharing those stories with me.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you.
And thank you at home for listening to us. We hope you enjoyed this episode and we hope you enjoyed these stories and these discussions. Let us know if there's any particular survival story that really that you really enjoy and, you know, you wish that we might discuss on a future episode, maybe. As long as it doesn't involve Tom Hanks and football
Wilson.
Called Wilson. Oh, no, volleyball. Is it a volleyball?
Oh, I don't know.
Football? Yeah.
It's an American thing. I don't know.
One big like advert for FedEx, is it?
FedEx? Soccer ball. Yeah, FedEx.
Yeah. But yeah, no, thank you, everyone, so, so much for watching. Is there anything else we needed to say? We good?
I mean, I'd like to know the answer to that riddle.
Of course, yeah. I always forget the answer to the riddle. Yes. So do you have any ideas, Robin? I'll read it again.
Yeah, read it again, and I think I have an idea.
Two fathers and two sons are in a car, yet there are only three people in the car. How is this possible?
Tricky one. I think this is a tricksy one. Is it that two of them are men and the other one is a woman, and the two men happen to be fathers, but of course, in order to exist, they are also sons. And the third person is neither a father nor a son because she's a woman.
I'm sorry, Robert. That's not the answer I have. That's incorrect, yeah.
Damn it!
It's simpler than that, I think. Two fathers and two sons. You've got a grandfather, a father, okay, and a son.
I was about to say, yeah, that's the like my solution better.
What does
yours was wittier, but mine was better.
How does the female factor into your answer there?
Because she can't be a father or a son.
So it could just be
two. There's two men in the car, and they both happen to be dads whose children aren't present. But yes, grandfather, father, and son is a more satisfying answer.
Okay. All right.
I'm just saying it's another possibility. I'm just saying, you know.
Technically, I'm right, actually. Well, I'll accept it. I'll accept that answer either way.
No, don't accept it. That's not the actual answer. It's grandfather, father, son. And I was wrong again.
Yes, I'm afraid so. Well, Robin was wrong, but were you right? Let us know in the comments down below. Thank you again so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.